My name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Mornings on Radio Memphis, starting at 9 o'clock Central, is our old friend Doc Studdard. So I finally got the chance to sit down with him, and as promised, heard his story. You're a whore in the business.
Yes, sir.
We're all whores in the business.
Sir. Yeah, need I say more? Look at this right here, this Jones's Fufu Berry.
Yeah, Dennis and I on the label there. That was made for us, and then it was given to us, and then it was, hey, check this out. If you want like a case of them, let us know. And they sent like a six-pack over.
Nice.
But those are the same people that make the turkey and gravy soda.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I think I would rather drink the Fufu Berry.
It's not good unless you put gin in it.
Anything is better with gin.
It's a carbonated juice. That's all it is.
Well, you know, over at that place right over here, Sweet Noshings, they have like bacon flavored soda, and I haven't had the balls enough yet to do it, because it's like, you know, I do love bacon, but if you had something that was that kind of bacon and you took it and it just, what if it ruined bacon for you?
It could.
I mean, what the hell's worth living for if it ruins bacon for you and you can't have bacon anymore?
Bacon flavored vodka exists.
Yeah, I don't think I've had anything like that that's bacon flavored yet. I haven't.
I've had salmon flavored beer.
Ugh.
Smoked salmon beer, yeah.
I don't like smoked salmon to begin with.
Yeah.
So,
well, you're Native American. You should like fish.
Yeah, because they had a bunch of those out there on the plains. Asshole. Yeah, they're North Dakota is famous for their salmon fishing.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Well, maybe. Well, trout, I guess.
Trout. Yeah. No.
I just can't see a bunch of, you know.
Now, when there's
a bunch of guys with fly rods out there.
Exactly. It's like, hey, I'm going to go catch me some trout today. No. Now, when they have a buffalo flavored beer, you know, then you can let me know.
When I lived in Kansas, they had beefalo.
Yeah, a cow and a buffalo mixed together. That's actually...
It's actually more tasty than...
And that's actually what half, keep it a secret, you know, that's half of what the herd is over at Shelby Farms.
Beefalo?
Yeah, those are not 100% pure North American bison. Mm-mm. Those came from the Navy base out in Millington. They used to have them out at Millington, out at the stables.
Right.
And they had to move them big sons of bitches when they were getting ready to you know, give that side of the base to Millington. And I was actually there and helped them move one of the big bulls.
Uh-huh.
And that son of a bitch jumped on the hood of the truck that we were using to pull the trailer to load him into to
fuck
move
that
him.
All up I'm
oh
sure.
Dude, and I was in there with a couple black guys and they were freaking the hell out, man. I mean, you know how black people can get that suspicion, you know, man, that damn man, that buffalo up on top of here, man, oh shit. I'm just sitting in the back going man, he'll go away.
He'll go away.
He'll just, be fine.
He'll go away.
It's so weird.
Buffalo on its own is so dry.
Yeah, but it's still good. It's leaner for you.
Yeah, that's why it's dry. It's because
of course, you know, we would be able to have buffalo a lot more if it weren't for all those, you know, crazy white folk, you know.
Shooting them from the trains.
Yeah, exactly. There'd be a bunch more of them out there.
Well, they're making a comeback.
Okay. Once again, I'm pretty sure that those...
No, there's a market for it. The Super Low out east sells buffalo.
Yeah, and where do you think they get it from? I'm pretty sure it's not like free-range chicken.
No,
from a, you know, area that's this big. I mean, hell, Ted Nugent grows buffalo, for God's sakes.
Yeah,
you know?
Well.
That's the big... They breed them, and I'm pretty sure those bison have never been able to run on the plains.
No.
You know, they run from food spot A to food spot B, and then... Good night, you know.
Yeah, that's it. Quick shot. That's it.
That's it. Just one.
Do they make them feel more at home when they run a train through the pasture?
I don't know. You know, when they were going to split Shelby Farms that time, that was the only thing that AIM has ever done in the city of Memphis. When they were going to split Shelby Farms, me and about 50 other people from AIM were the people who went out and set up camp at Shelby Farms in the bison range. We climbed the fence and set all up just to bring, you know, notice to that, because people, that was part of their habitat, was where they were at.
Right.
And they were wanting to move them, and now they're building an entire new area. There's a whole new enclosure over there for the bison in Shelby Farms.
Well, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
So AIM is kind of tamed down over the years.
AIM is nothing. Dude, they have fucking bake sales. You know, I mean, it just, it's nothing. I mean, it used to be, especially since Russell Means passed away, you know, I mean, I think that they have completely gone to doing nothing. They have a podcast and that's it, but I guess they finally figured, you know, white people won, you know, so it's just
caved in and just, yeah, just deal with it.
Yeah. Forget about it. You know, because back in the 70s, they had the reoccupation of Wounded Knee. You know, they occupied the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Washington for like a week, you know, and they did all kinds of things. And then the 80s rolled around and they finally started using, you know, Native Americans in movies and stuff, real Native Americans.
Yeah, instead of white guys in brown face.
Yeah, not Jack Palance painted, you know, brown, you know. Yeah. And they're like, hey, we got what we wanted. There's Indians in movies now. So, you know, fuck it.
Wasn't Iron Eyes Cody, he
wasn't even Indian. He was Italian.
He was Italian.
He was Italian.
He was from Louisiana, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he was Italian. Yeah, wasn't even. And grow up watching him like, oh, man, you know, that poor Indian dude. And find out he's Italian. It's like, you probably celebrate Columbus Day, you freaking just genocidal bastard.
Yeah, because Columbus Day is not considered to be like the, you know, not amongst your people.
No, sir. Not at all. It's Happy Genocidal Maniac Day, you know, is how we refer to as that. It was definitely interesting, you know, being... You know, growing up in school and seeing those things and hearing history read to me that way, you know, and when you hear about it, because, you know, it's the European version of history, you know, where it's like, you know, five Indians killed, you know, 20 white people and it was a massacre and 20 white people killed 200 Indians and it's justified, you know. So it was interesting. And then moving to Texas and being that close to Native American populations,
right,
like in Oklahoma, and seeing these powwows and all these white folk that show up with, you know, yellow feathers and red feathers and shit and stuff in their hairs and their cowboy hats and, you know, beating on a drum where it looks like they, you know, it's plastic pulled real tight. God, man, white people will buy anything, dude. It's
oh yeah, oh yeah. There's a running gag around here with a friend of mine down the road, white guy by the name of Bubba Bonds, the drummer for the Tan Lines, and he'll sit there and go, damn white people.
Dude, they'll buy anything. Dream catchers were thought up of by Indian women to sit on the roadside and sell them to white tourists coming through. Right. You know, it's like, ooh, hey, reservation, let's go get some cheap cigarettes and all that stuff. You know, there's no taxes because the Indians don't have to do that. God love them. And they put them like, oh, would you like a little dream catcher? It keeps the bad dreams away. Oh, yes, I will buy this. And I will give you $20 for it, you know, native person. And it makes me feel better about being white. So here you go. Yeah.
Yeah, after all of our people had screwed you, you know, over the years.
You know, people talk about it. They love running through the whole, you know, think about Nazis and committing genocide. And people tend to forget that the shit happened right here in North America.
Yeah, you got thrown out of the Museum of National American History.
Yeah, the Great Western Expansion Museum in St. Louis. Yeah. Because first off... it was right after 9/11, so it probably wasn't exactly the best of moves. But yeah, they have that tour, and right off the bat, they start the tour, and they're talking about Lewis and Clark, you know. Uh-huh. And the tour guide is saying, you know, that they were encumbered by this and that, and by the time they got to the ocean, you know, it was wonderful. They mapped it all out, and she didn't once mention the Nez Perce Indians,
right,
you know, who were the people that took Lewis and Clark in when Meriwether Lewis had smallpox and swamp fever and all that kind of shit and took care of him. Never once mentioned him. So I kind of raised my hand, you know, and the tour guide was like, yes, sir. And I'm like, yeah, didn't the Nez Perce kind of show them lost assholes the way to the West Coast? Because I'm pretty sure they were going to find Canada before they found the Pacific Ocean.
They needed to turn west instead of keep going north.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? And she's like, well, you know, sir, that's one of the common rumors. And I'm like, no, bitch, this ain't a rumor.
No.
It's history, you know? And she was like, well, sir, if you could just keep your questions kind of to yourself, maybe. And I was like, okay, no problem.
Wow.
So we go through and I'm listening to this bullshit. And then we go into her room and there is a huge stuffed buffalo in the middle of the road, or middle of the room. And I mean, a big bull, beautiful. And she's talking about, you know, the railroads and this and that. And then she utters one of the most idiotic statements I've ever heard before, that the great North American bison were almost hunted to extinction by Native Americans. And I'm like, well, hold up, boop, hand goes up again. And I'm like, ooh, 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 T, teach, you know, and she, yes, sir. And I'm like, yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
I'm like,
that's bullshit.
I'm like, ma'am, I'm sorry, but, it was all white people hunting them for their tongues, their horns, and their pelts. You know what I mean? That was it. And then it was the railroad coming through because they didn't want those poor rich people to have their, you know, rides interrupted and their asses hurt when a train hit a buffalo, which there was never a recorded incident of that happening. It's not because of Buffalo Bill Cody and Wild Bill Hickok. It's because if you're standing on some shit and a big black thing coming towards you is making a lot of noise, you tend to kind of move out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, so, and she was like, well, sir, once again, this is my tour. I get paid to do this. I went to school for this. So, and I'm like,
taught that bitch wrong.
Oh, I'm like, I don't know what fucking school you went to, lady, whatever, you know. And then we go into the other room, and by now she's giving me the evil eye, you know, and we're getting ready to walk out. And my people are Ogallala Lakota Sioux, okay? And our big chief was a guy named Red Cloud. He waged war against the government for years and then finally set up terms in the Great Laramie Treaty, the Fort Laramie Treaty, to bring the last wild band of Ogallala Sioux into the reservation. And there's an animatronic of him the end. And I'm like, you know, that's a accurate representation of what he looks like and all this stuff. And he raises his hand and, you know, it's a little animatronic thing and says in the most southern, you know, like white voice ever, "Hi, I'm Red Cloud. Thank you for coming to the Great Western Expansion Museum." Dude, I flipped a script, you know, because, I mean, it was an interpretation of a guy who meant a lot to my family to see him speaking that kind of English and saying, "Thanks for coming to the Great Western Expansion Museum," and learning essentially how our people were wiped out by you guys. And I got all pissy, and I started talking about Red Cloud this and Red Cloud that, and she kind of reaches up and does one of these numbers with her shirt to her mouth, and next thing I know, these two big freaking thugs in suits and shades come and grab me and
white people.
Yep, out of there I went. And what was great was sitting out front was a band of Hunkpapa Sioux, which is what Sitting Bull was. They're sitting outside in a drum circle, drumming, protesting, and I get thrown out, you know, and I'm all screaming back at these thugs and shit. You know, I'm like, "That's fine. I'll sit out here with my people and drum. It's fine. It's fine." And my buddy David, who was with me, was standing behind the guys, and he goes, "Dude, I'm gonna go on the tour. I'm gonna go up in the arch, you know." So. Yeah. "I'll see you in a few."
He's not like, "We're near that, right?"
Yeah, I'm like, "All right, dude, it's fine." No, I didn't even get to go up in the arch, you know, and I'm sure that put me on a federal watch list among many other things, but yeah.
I don't know. I would think that the Native American thing isn't going to put you on so much of a watch list anymore.
I don't think so. Not anymore, but, you know, I mean,
yeah, we'll teach those Redskins,
exactly, you know. But see, that's something that never bothered me, like the names, you know, Kansas City Chiefs, you know, things like that. To me, that's stupid, you know. It's
the
like
Washington Redskins.
Yeah, the Washington Redskins doesn't bother me. The Detroit Red Wings doesn't bother me. I mean, none of the Indian teams bother me. I mean, you know, there was a team at a community college in North Dakota that they called themselves the Fightin' Whiteys.
Uh-huh.
You know, just to get back. And I'm like, you know, I mean, it doesn't bother me, man. No. I mean, it's, you know, who cares?
It's people looking for a reason to be insulted.
Oh, yeah, like the Atlanta Braves. I hate the Atlanta Braves, but not because of the name.
No, I'm sick of them, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's not a big deal. And people standing up going, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, the tomahawk chop." You know what? It doesn't bother me. Indians were portrayed like in the old Popeye cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't exactly the most racially sensitive kind of cartoons, but they were funny. And as long as it's funny, it's okay.
Yeah. What was did you ever, when you were growing up, there was a juice that had an Indian on it, and it was like Powwow Punch, maybe?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Or something like that. And they had these really hokey television commercials where they had a picture of, you know, of an Indian, and then they cut the mouth out and they put a guy's lips in there and he would talk.
Oh, wow, nice.
Yeah.
No, I always grew up with the, you know, the baking powder, you know, with the Indian on it, you know, and like I said, the Popeye and hell, the Bugs Bunny cartoon where it's a big red guy where his chest's all bowed out, his arms like that, and he's got the big headdress and the big nose and all that. Personally, my favorite portrayal of Native Americans ever is in Blazing Saddles.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, "Oy vey, they darker than we are." Yeah, because
he's speaking Yiddish the entire time.
Exactly. Yeah, that's quite possibly my favorite portrayal of Native Americans on film ever is Mel Brooks. So, yeah. Yep. That and Graham Greene in Maverick.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you know, where they have the camp set up and they're doing it for the Russian guy. And he's like, he wants us to talk. I'm like, "How, white man?" And all that kind of stuff. He's like, "Oh, dude, I love that. That's a great portrayal."
What about Billy Jack?
Oh, Billy Jack, dude. Jesus, man. I mean, seriously, when you grow up and You know, you don't have a whole lot of heroes when you're proud of your heritage growing up. I mean, I didn't really have anybody that I could latch onto as a hero, because like I watched the cowboy and Indians movies when I was a kid, the old black and white John Waynes that re-aired, and I watched these movies, and dude, how am I supposed to feel proud about watching a thing where these guys are killing people that were related to me, and they're making a sport of it, and they make it funny and this and that? And then, you know, back in the day, TBS only had like four movies. They had Billy Jack, The Poseidon Adventure, Beastmaster, and Towering Inferno.
Yep.
And I happened to catch Billy Jack one time. I was probably about eight and saw it. And here's this guy who's half Indian, half white, you know, goes back to the reservation and takes care of the people. And he's a karate badass, know, before that whole trend started. And, dude, that was it. I remember my mother paying like $80 for Billy Jack on VHS for me back in the day, so I could watch it whenever I want to. And in my life, I got to meet Tom Laughlin and got to talk to him quite a bit. And, you know, I mean,
he was a hero in the community, though.
He was, man. He did a lot of things. I mean, he started all kinds of things out in California that were an alternative school for kids and stuff, you know, using more positive reinforcement and things like that. And he held clinics for alcoholics. He held clinics for people that were victims of domestic abuse. You know, I mean, and the guy did so much for the entertainment community that a lot of people don't realize. Back when, you know, older people were growing up, movies were not released at the same time all over the United States. It would open one weekend in New York, and then the next weekend it would be in L.A. When he made The Trial of Billy Jack, which was part two of Billy Jack, he created what they call the blockbuster opening. He rented out movie theaters all over the country and released it on the exact same day across the country. Up till then, nobody had done that. Nobody. And until the Blair Witch Project came out, Billy Jack was the number one grossing independent movie of all time.
I did not know that.
Yes, sir. Man, like I said, Tom Laughlin, you know what I mean? Man, he to me, he was a rare human being. He was very cool. And I used to do, when he passed away, I was really upset about it. I mean, because, I mean, to me, he was a hero growing up. You know, I can quote that movie line for line. I even had a Billy Jack hat when I was a kid.
So, now, it's your grandfather that's full-blooded?
Yes, yeah. My grandfather was full-blooded Lakota Sioux. And
what did he think of, just, you know, like that?
I don't know. He was he's the one that actually died when my dad was young, my grandfather. Yeah. And it was my great-grandfather that I knew. He thought that Billy Jack was interesting. You know, I mean, he thought that it didn't... there were a lot of things that would offend him by stuff like that, but Billy Jack really didn't, you know? I mean, he thought it was great. You know, he felt that they could have found maybe a more Indian-ish kind of guy, but when Laughlin did this, he paid mad respect to the Native Americans. You know, he didn't make fun of them. He had real Native Americans in his movie years before Hollywood ever was putting people in it. They actually told him that if he wanted you know, funding from some places, that he could not use real Native Americans. So, you know, but Tom was like, you know what? No, I'm doing this independently. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want to do. If I don't get distribution for it, fine. And that's why on its first run, Billy Jack was actually in porn houses, because they didn't know what to do with it because of the whole rape scene in it, you know?
Yeah.
It was in places like Paris Theater.
Right.
You know, you could go and see it. And then he bought it back from Warner Brothers and then handled distribution on his own on it. So
smart.
Yeah, and you know, hell, he ran for president one year. You know, I had a Billy Jack for President button, had a Billy Jack for President sign in my yard. You know, I was like, hell yeah, dude, vote for Billy Jack. You know, it's a better world. You know?
Sort of like when when John Wayne's The Alamo was being made. They didn't hire Mexicans to play the Mexicans.
You know? No, I wouldn't think so.
No.
That would be funny. It's like, hey, we kind of want you guys to come in. Remember what your ancestors did? Let's just do that shit. Run with it.
Yeah, no, it wasn't happening.
Well, you know, that movie, though, did you ever see the remake with Billy Bob in it?
I did, yeah.
You know, that one, they talk about being more historically accurate, that Davy Crockett actually survived the initial push and was captured by Santa Anna.
Santa Anna, yeah.
And they executed him out in front of the Alamo. You know, I was like, man, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, they think that's, of course, there was really no survivors of that.
Uh-huh.
Aside, there may have been like one or two that may have survived long enough to just want to get that whole thing out of their head.
Right.
Because it was a pretty violent.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Violent thing.
I've been to the Alamo. I mean, because I lived in Texas. Hell, you were from San Antonio.
Yeah,
so
I lived there.
Know.
Yeah, I grew up.
How many times did you go there on field trips when you were a kid?
Oh, God, every year,
It's like, we're going to the field trip. We're going to the Alamo again. Great.
Yeah, great. Yeah, great. When right before I left there, the University of Texas was doing, they were doing some work there to talk about, because that whole courtyard area was, they planted some grass and they got a couple of trees in there.
Right.
which were never there at the time, of course.
No dirt.
And they were looking to put in like paving stones in and around that area to make it real nice, you know. And they were digging a lot of the old stuff up, and they came across the old well.
Oh, man.
And they stopped everything, and they went down into that well, and they found a bunch of bones.
Oh, shit.
And they think what happened, and it makes sense, is that when the Mexicans finally overran the Alamo and they killed a bunch of people, they were just throwing their bodies down in that well.
Oh, yeah, mass grave, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not like they're going to bury them. You know, it's like, y'all do something with these where the crows ain't getting them. Down the well they went.
Absolutely, because there really weren't that many people that were in the Alamo when the Mexicans showed up.
It was bad. A lot of people, because I remember they had already dispatched a bunch of their army to go meet somebody else or something.
They were trying to get Sam Houston to come back.
Yeah, right. And yeah, Houston, he just a little late there, buddy.
Yeah, well, he never really showed back up. But when Santa Ana came through San Antonio, he wound up meeting Houston. Mm-hmm. And Goliad, and they had the big fight there.
There was lots of things that I'm pretty lucky about is all the places that I've grown up in. There has been so much history, mm-hmm. you know, there, because mm-hmm. I can't imagine growing up in, like, I don't know, Idaho. The fuck ever happened in Idaho?
Somebody grew a tater?
Exactly. Nebraska. Corn.
Yeah.
And unless you're into, you know, football, you know, college football and high school football. I mean, I grew up in Memphis, Texas, Louisiana, yeah. even Norfolk, Virginia.
A lot of history.
A lot of history, because we were very close to Jamestown and stuff and all that when I lived in Virginia. And I love that. I've been to D.C. 3 or 4 times, because unlike most people my age, I actually read for pleasure and read for enlightenment, you know.
Yeah.
And I love history. I think history is one of the, it's interesting to me to see how people lived then and how far and how sometimes how so little we've come.
Oh, big time. Changed. Yeah, it does seem like here in the 21st century, you look back and you go, man, they were doing this back then and we mm-hmm. can't do that now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what the hell?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah, I've gone back since I've left school. And reread some of the books I was supposed to have been reading.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this is cool. Now I see why I just didn't have time, where I was too drunk to read.
Right.
It's hard to read with one hand.
Yeah. He's like, what? Fuck it. There's not enough pictures in this book. Yeah.
Exactly. I was one of those guys in college that I would unfortunately have to sign up for an 8 a.m. class because it was the only time it was offered.
Right.
So I learned a pretty cool trick that, because usually it would be like on a Monday, which is the worst time. Monday 8 a.m. class, mm-hmm. it would just suck. And I'd been drinking and carrying on all weekend long. So when Monday came, it was like, oh, fuck this. So I would go and buy cans of tomato juice, and I would drink a couple of swallows out of it and fill the rest of it with vodka. And I would take a Bloody Mary into class, and right. it made it a little more tolerable to sit there and
yeah.
listen to the bullshit that a lot of these out-of-touch instructors would try and lay on to these people.
Oh, yeah. Well, I kind of regret that I didn't get to go to college to do stuff like that. I mean, I've been to college for different things, and none of them were... I don't know. It's stupid when you look back at shit that you went to college for, and you're like, wow, what was I thinking when I did that? You know,
I look back now on it myself, and I think that college is overrated. To a certain extent.
Yeah. I mean, because you can learn a lot of stuff. You know, if you got all book smarts and no street smarts, you're just going to be a dead some bitch.
Absolutely.
Know? I mean, you got to have street smarts. You got to know how to handle yourself. And like I said, when I look back, I'm like, what the hell was a degree in philosophy really going to do for me? What the hell was I thinking? You know, and then it's like, oh, you know, I have sociology and psychology. That was interesting. Sociology is very interesting. I love it because you can kind of judge people and you know different classes of people and all that. And then getting my EMT license, that was actually something that I was going to do and do for a little bit, and I did do for a little bit, but and then the whole heat and air thing, you know, and it's just like, wow, you know, from philosophy to a technical certificate at Shelby State.
It's the journey we all make. You know,
yeah.
But no, I think even nowadays, I think a higher education can be almost detrimental to a certain point, because like you said, I think a lot of people have this book smart thing but have no clue what the real world is about.
Oh yeah, none at all. And also what kills me is a lot of the jobs that existed, say, 25-30 years ago, there are so many people needing those positions now because everybody moved into my generation, all started that computer programming shit. Mm-hmm. That's what was thrown down everybody's throat. Go to college, learn computer programming, do this, do that. Nobody said learn how to, you know, frame a house. Nobody said learn how to, you know,
weld.
Make glass, you know, weld, like you said, things like that. And now those jobs where people actually get their hands dirty, those guys are in their 60s and 70s and finally retiring from these jobs, and there's nobody out there to do these things because a kid is like, what's that? If I can't sit here, oh, an AutoCAD. Yeah, I can type that up on my computer and it'll laser print that out. No, fool. I mean, get out there, cut the shit with a cutting torch, put it together, MIG weld it, TIG weld it, do whatever you got to do. Yeah, jobs like that, there's nobody to do those.
I have learned, though, that when when I get like a fairly complicated piece of software I need to learn how to use, mm-hmm. it has a steep learning curve to it. YouTube, man.
Oh, yeah.
There's a 9-year-old who's made a video right. on how to Photoshop. And you said, first of all, you have to get past the, okay, I feel stupid.
Right.
But I'm in the privacy of my own home here, and nobody has to realize that little Lefkowitz bastard is teaching me how to use this,
right.
the software.
When all else fails, read the instructions, man.
Oh, yeah. Okay, here's how you could do this and fix that. You know,
they had a thing about that. There was a 5-year-old kid I saw one time that actually was able to hack into his father's Xbox Live account. He found a way around the security code, mm-hmm. and it was just like hitting buttons and doing something like that. A 5-year-old figured out how to do that. But see, that's what's wrong, man. Is, you know, all right, one of my favorite songs of all time is Zager and Evans, In the Year 2525.
Yeah.
Where it says, you know, at one point in time, you know, your arms and legs hang rest at your side, and you, nothing to think, do, or say. It's all in the pill you took today. Things like that. Man, that is steadily becoming a reality.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And if you watch movies as much as I do, man allowing technology to do more for them never ends well.
It never does.
In the movies. Uh-huh. You either get Skynet. Okay, uh-huh. you know, where we're all hunted, or you have the Matrix, you know, where we're food for them. It never ends well when we allow technology to take that much of our lives and have something to do with it. You know,
it's like when computers came into the radio industry, mm-hmm. and I watched that happen,
right?
And I thought, okay, I can see where this might be fairly beneficial because of, you know, how quick a commercial can be gone from production into an on the air sequence, and then it was. Okay, we're going to start allowing these things to take over a little bit more and a little bit more. And when the this software called Prophet came in, next gen,
right?
If that wasn't Skynet enough, but Prophet was Prophet. You know, we all know what the original, because Clear Channel had the damn thing,
right?
So they sent me to the school in Kansas to learn it, and I was up there for about a week, and I came back and I called a couple of friends of mine, and we met at this bar. And I said, I've witnessed the death of the LP, the cart, cassette, CDs are on their way out, dude. I said, your job is on the way out.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, even here at Radio Memphis, you know, we turn it loose, turn it over to the machine. It does it.
Yep. That's it.
Has its place. But, you know, if you give it too much control. And they told us in that class that that this system neither requires nor requests human input.
Wow. Requests human input. I'd have been like, okay, cool. Like I said, Skynet. Yeah.
What's coming?
Has anybody ever seen Terminator? Hello.
Oh, they've got new drones now that are going to be rocket powered and jet powered. You know, they can fly it out of Washington, D.C. and kill somebody in Memphis in like 5 seconds. You'd just be sitting there watching TV and.
Which once again just all bodes to my 5-year plan of being on an island somewhere in the middle of nowhere in a loincloth, you know, in a great tan.
Make sure you have no mobile phone.
Yeah.
No, nothing. Modern technology. You got to go on Gilligan's Island on everybody. Yeah,
well, you know what? That's fine. I can take a couple banana peels and a coconut and make me a radio, you know, and
professor.
Yes. You know, that guy could take 2 banana peels, 4 coconuts and could make a nuclear reactor, but he couldn't fix a 4-foot hole in a boat.
Right.
Just call me crazy.
And Russell Johnson often spoke of that.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, how everybody... I want to know how the hell the Harlem Globetrotters got on the fucking island, you know?
Yeah.
And then they got off the island while everybody else was still on the island. Yeah, it's like, thanks, Harlem Globetrotters.
Thanks, man. But, yeah, that TV back in that era was so schlocky and syrupy and...
Dude, you had a comedy that was a hit that was sent in a Nazi... POW camp.
I know. Still one of my favorite shows.
Mine too. I mean, I love Hogan's Heroes, but still, when you look at the concept and you realize that the Jewish community, all those guys, all the executives were Jewish.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't have been the guy that had to sell that show.
The pitch session had to have been weird.
It's like, look, guys. I'm going to tell you, it's set in a Nazi death camp. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. But it's funny. They're inept Germans, and they're foiled at every turn by this guy, Hogan, and this British guy that we're going to bring in, you know, the guy who's going to wind up on Family Feud, and, you know, it's going to be fine, and we'll make jokes of it, and, you know, call the guy Colonel Klink and all this, and I just, man.
Well, all the guys who played the Germans were all Jews.
Oh, yeah. Yep, every single one of them. Like I said, and I can't imagine still, like I said, because if I would have been sitting in there on that board thing, I'd have been like, man, I'm just going to kind of sink back into my chair. Yeah. This fucking guy, this is never going
to
work.
When Werner Klimperer was cast to play Clink, he said, I would only do it as long as I can be that inept idiot
right.
and make fun of it. Mm-hmm. John Banner, Schultz, he had family that had died.
Really?
In Germany.
Jesus.
Or Poland or somewhere like that, yeah. Uh-huh. So
well, once again, like you said, that was
balls.
Yeah, and even if you look back, even on some of the stuff, considering how back in the day, how reserved the United States was. Because, like, all right, perfect example to me is, you know, Harry Potter comes out the books. Mm-hmm. People start bitching left and right about it being witchcraft. You know, about mm-hmm. oh, these kids are reading this and this, the devil and Jesus and this and that. I wonder what happened when Bewitched came on every night in prime time.
I never thought of that. Yeah.
Because, I mean, it was witchcraft. There was, you know, the bitch could wrinkle her nose and make somebody disappear. I'm amazed that nobody ever bitched about that. And then you've got, you know, I Dream a Genie, which is you got a blonde chick with big boobies calling Larry Hagman master.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's like, man, you know, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, please. I'd like Barbara Eden back in the day. Dude.
Oh, Lord, yes.
Jesus. It's like when I used to stay home from school sick, I had to figure out which one I wanted to jerk off to, Bewitched or I Dream a Genie.
And know? Then when Wonder Woman came out, Linda Carter.
I never understood why my dad used to, like, knock me out of the way when that show used to come on when I was a kid. Till I got a little bit older, till I was about, I guess, about 10 or 11. And then I'm like, I get it now. Yeah.
Well, the whole women empowerment thing, because, you know, in the 70s, it was like, you know, keep the bitch in the kitchen where she belongs.
Right.
And here she was starring in a television show as a hero.
Oh, yeah. And then they had the Saturday morning live shows, because there was that one that I found the other day on Hulu that came on when I was a kid. You know how they had, like, Land of the Lost?
Yeah,
that
would come
on. There was that one, Isis, that was about a high school teacher.
I vaguely remember this.
Yeah, and, like, she would have the power of Isis and save people, and it was the same old shit. It's like, wow. It was it was that kind of Sid and Marty Croft kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff,
well,
you know?
They were twisted anyway.
Oh, just the H&R Puffin stuff. You know?
That's an acid trip. That's all
Jesus,
that is.
Yeah, dude. And then there was the one with not the skipper, but Bob Denver was in it with the other fat guy that looked kind of like the skipper, but it wasn't the skipper.
Before Gilligan's Island?
No, this was after Gilligan's Island, and it was essentially like a Lost in Space kind of thing that these guys did.
Oh,
it was a Marty and Croft thing, and I said I can't remember the fat guy's name, but it was the same fat guy that was in that Dr. Pepper commercial that Leafy showed me the other day of the old Dr. Pepper, where he's acting like Quasimodo, and it was some fat guy who was a comedian, but it was not Skipper, is the way I referred to him. You know, so.
I'm gonna have to look that one up,
dude. I'm telling you, yeah, all that stuff in Land of the Lost, and dude, we had shows like BJ and the Bear, okay, a truck driver and a freaking monkey that rides around with
right,
him.
Right.
And then you could see where technology started coming in then, because then we had Knight Rider.
Yeah.
You know?
The talking car.
Yeah.
And then you had all the other, you know, like Fantasy Island, which was just as effed up.
Oh, dude, yeah. There were some crazy episodes of Fantasy Island when I was a kid. And then The Love Boat, of course, you know.
Which is really nothing more than a spinoff of it.
Yep. I mean, if you got your problems. And that was the thing, too, is spinoffs, because you had, let's see, just off of Happy Days, you had Mork and Mindy, you had Laverne and Shirley, and Joni Loves Chachi all spun right out of those. Mm-hmm. And now what amazes me is when you watch a show on FX. Okay, on regular TV, FX is basic cable, which pretty much everybody has. They say shit.
Oh, yeah.
Son of a bitch. Uh-huh. God damn it. Uh-huh. I've heard them say dick. All that stuff. Some of the words that George Carlin actually said would never be allowed on TV.
Right.
Is allowed on TV now. How far we have come from Lucy and Ricky having to sleep in separate beds. And even on I Love Lucy, you know, they could never show a bathroom.
That's right.
They couldn't show a bathroom. To that, to... You know, the guy that plays Jax, you know, in Sons of Anarchy. Now you see his ass and side boob and, like, almost the JJ of the chick that he's banging on the TV show.
When you're watching, like, soap operas nowadays, damn.
I haven't watched one in a long time.
Oh, my God.
I used to watch One Wife to Give. Or I mean, One Wife to Give.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Days of Our Lives, of course.
Young and the Restless. I was a big General Hospital guy.
Really?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
Rick Springfield, huh? Did it for you.
I wasn't Rick, no. But and I'll still catch a little bit of it from time to time.
Jack Wagner.
Yeah. And nowadays, you know, and I hadn't seen it in a while, and I was sitting down, I was watching some TV, and I was looking for something to watch, and it was on the soap channels. It was kind of late at night. And I said, well, I hadn't seen this in a while. And
right.
So I kick on there, and there was a love scene going on. And it's like, ding.
Bounce, 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 go out.
I mean, just shy a nipple,
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was snout.
Well, you know, like, man, it's just how TV has changed.
The first sound of a toilet flush on primetime television occurred during what show?
I'm going to go with The Brady Bunch.
All in the Family.
Really? Nice.
It was a shot of the living room and the staircase. Uh-huh. The toilet flushes, and down walks Archie with a newspaper under his arm.
Huh. No shit. And that was also one of the most racist shows ever. And that had a spinoff as well. It had the Jeffersons.
Yep.
It was actually spun off of that. And I do know that the first interracial kiss ever was on Star Trek between Kirk and Uhura.
Yep.
You know, of course, James T. Kirk, man, he got all the vagina in the universe,
he
man.
He stuck that in things he shouldn't
he
have.
He got alien herpes, man. At some point in time, it's like we were talking about Richard Dawson, you know, like, so when he was hosting Family Feud, that son of a bitch would kiss every woman on the lips, no matter... He's like, and here's my 90-year-old grandma. Hello, grandma.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Dawson.
Speaking of that, and back to Hogan's Heroes, have you seen the film Autofocus?
Yes, about Bob Crane. Yes, yes. And his death and everything.
I needed a shower after I watched that.
Yeah, dude, that movie. Greg Kinnear was amazing in that movie. But still, yeah, you're right. When it's like, holy shit, you know, the stuff that he was going on, that he was doing. And, of course, that guy harkens back to being a DJ. You know, Bob Crane was a DJ. He was a drummer, a musician, an actor, did, you know, dinner theater when he couldn't get a gig anywhere else. And apparently, you know, he had his own little stash. He was probably one of the first guys to ever make homemade porn.
So, big time.
You know, hats off to him.
His
you know?
Son, Robert.
Bob Crane Jr.
I think it was his Bobby Jr. He released a website about 10 years ago that was all of his dad's collection.
Wow.
Of him working it.
Whew.
And
is that your finger near my ass?
It's a group grope. And he came out after the film came out and was bitching about how a lot of the things that occurred in the film really weren't real. And saying, you know, like, the whole thing about the penis implant.
Right.
He said, no, he never needed it. And he said, here's proof.
Wow. My dad had a big cock.
Much what it was. Yeah. And he shows it's up on
the
website.
It's genetic, ladies.
Yeah. Hung down to his knees. You know, he could play golf with his hands tied behind his back. Michael Fassbender's going, all right.
Right, yeah. Tommy Lee's like, ooh, hey, drummers. Yes.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, exactly.
But all that got taken down. All those old... You know, the early days, the scan VHS. And
oh,
stuff.
Yeah. He had, what was that guy's name? John Carpenter.
John
not
Carpenter.
To be confused with the director of horror movies, but the guy's name was John Carpenter. He worked for Sony and was one of the first guys to start bringing. They actually pretty much believe that he was the one that murdered him. I mean, I remember they found blood on his car that was the same blood and all that stuff as Bob Crane's, or they found something in his car that had it on it and all that. So, yeah, that movie, another movie. That if you've ever seen that, I feel like I definitely needed a shower after watching that, is freaking Hollywoodland.
Oh, God,
about
yes.
John Holmes with Val Kilmer. Jesus Christ, dude.
Yeah.
Movie. Whoa.
It's the post-John Holmes porn career.
Yeah.
And the coke and the problems.
Yeah, the coke and the heroin and everything else. And, you know, there were six people? Five or six people. I think it might have been five because it was three couples and one dude was out of town. So it had to be at least five people that were just bludgeoned to death in those apartments on you know, Wonderland Drive, you know, and it's like, damn.
Did they ever solve the Wonderland murders?
No, they, actually, you know, what it was that movie Wonderland, when it came out, John Holmes' wife had wrote a tell-all book, and she waited until he was dead, and when he died, she released that book, and she told in that book that night that the murders occurred, John came to her house covered in blood, you know, told her everything, just like it's portrayed in the movie.
Right.
She says that really happened. I mean, they had John Holmes' handprint in blood of one of the victims on the wall above the dude's head. So they knew Holmes was there. They just never were able to pin it on him and the Arab guy that they robbed.
Yeah, yeah,
I can't remember his name, you know, because that's the reason why Boogie Nights was originally made. It's loosely based on John Holmes. And
it's
then
a comedic version of it.
Yeah, pretty much. And I mean, and then after, you know, John died, that's when his wife came out with that book. And they were like, hell yeah, let's make a movie out of this. And that's just a dark and gritty movie, man.
You mentioned Boogie Nights. There was a story I read earlier this morning about... Burt Reynolds. And when he did that film, his agent was like, this is going to resurrect your career. And it, to a certain extent, I think it was the plan. And he, and everybody liked him in it. He got a, he got an Oscar nomination for it. He won a Golden Globe out of the deal, and there were a couple of other awards that were bestowed upon him as a result of that. And then nothing happened to him.
Right.
And Burt turned around and fired everybody on his staff.
Wow.
Saying, this, this, I agreed to do this film because of this.
Well, I think it just happened because it was his age, man. I mean, you know, I mean, he's aging and old. Nobody wants, you know, the old guy. Because he was brilliant in the movie, I think. And it didn't exactly launch the career of Marky Mark either. I mean, he had to do a couple other shit flicks before he got to decent films. You know, but I mean, it didn't really boost Julianne Moore any. It didn't boost, if anything, it brought Heather Graham's career back around. Roller Girl.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the last thing that she was in was like License to Drive with Corey Haim and Corey Feldman, you know.
And then Philip Seymour Hoffman, he wound up doing pretty good.
Yeah. No, he did pretty good after that, of course. You know,
William H. Macy's in it briefly.
Yeah, briefly. He plays the guy whose wife, his wife was actually a porn star in the movie, and she really was a porn star. It was, oh, God, I forget her name. She's one of the most famous porn stars that had been out there for a while. Nina something. I forget her name, but she was the porn star. Nina Hartley,
Well, Nina's still alive.
Yeah, she's still alive, but she's in that movie. She plays the one that he walks in and shoots her because she's banging some other guy.
And shoots himself.
Just walks out and is like, fuck it.
Yeah.
Deuces. Good night.
Yeah, I met Nina Hartley at the Pony once.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, nice. I've only met like one or two porn stars, and it was pretty much Christy Canyon and Ron Jeremy. So,
oh, Christy's a lovely lady.
Oh, yeah. My, dude, I love Christy Canyon. Thank you for helping get me through puberty. Yeah, I mean,
a lot of people like to.
Only because, you know, dude, when you're that young, you've got movies like Porky's and stuff like that that would just do it for you in a heartbeat. When you're 10 years old and you're like, you know, it's like you're fine. And then by the time you're 15, you're like, man, this just ain't getting it. Hot bods ain't getting it.
No,
you know,
the shower scene in Stripes.
Yeah, nope. No. Yeah, that was great. John Larroquette. Looking through the window. Yeah. Oh, God, dude. I forgot about that. Yes.
It's like,
that.
Wow, they showed some serious bush in that film.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It wasn't doing it for you, nothing. So it's like, you know what? I think I'm going to get me some porn, you know? And that's when you actually have to order it through the back. You'd have to go buy one of those shitty magazines like We or something.
Yeah.
In the back of it, it's like, get 5 movies sent to you in a plain brown wrapper. Send us a check for $2, you know? And I'm like, all right, why not? You know, came in the house, you know, brown package. My mom brings it to me.
You got mail.
She's like, Michael, you got mail. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, oh, God.
My comic books are
coming. Yeah. She's like, what is it? I'm like, I don't know, Mom. I sent off for like a grab bag kind of thing out of the back of Grit magazine. You know, I'm like, I don't know. She walked out and left, and I'm like, yes. I'm like, but what the fuck am I going to do? I don't have a fucking VCR in my room. I'm like, damn it. I didn't think this all the way through, you know? Michael, you sure you don't want us to go rent you any movies tonight when we go out? No. I'm going to watch Spies Like Us again. It's fine.
Yeah, y'all have fun.
I got car out the driveway. Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later, it smells like us.
Oh, yeah. It's like, it'd be like, man, it'd be nice if I could get through the fucking previews of this porno movie, you know, and your kid.
Get some mileage out of this.
Yeah, it's like, eventually I'm going to figure out the whole storyline because I'll see the whole movie and understand it, you know.
And of course, with Spies Like Us, that was the debut of Vanessa Angel.
Oh, yes, it was. She wound up in the Weird Science TV show at some point in time. Spies Like Us, man, love that movie. Chevy Chase, great actor. Now, national treasure.
The national treasure that he is. And when he left Community or Parks and Rec,
whatever it was. Yeah,
they just canceled it.
Yeah. It was like, Chevy Chase ain't here no more. Fuck it.
And he came out and said that it was just unfunny stuff.
Nah.
I'm embarrassed to have been a part of it.
Oh, dude. Man, the movies that he has made, you know, they're staples of all that stuff of people my age that we all grew up watching. You know, all the National Lampoon's Vacations and Funny Farm and Fletch, you know.
There's talk of a new Fletch film and wanting to pass the torch like they did in the books. Because the books are great.
Oh, yeah. So I heard about that. Of course, you know, freaking Ghostbusters 3 is never going to happen now that Harold Ramis is gone. You know, God rest Egon's soul, you know. That was kind of sad. You know, we lost him this past year, and we lost Billy Jack. So there you go, man. That's it. That's all they need at the Oscars is just a tribute to Harold Ramis and Billy Jack. You know?
If they don't, you know, forget him.
Oh, I know, right? It was at the Grammys the first year after Janie Lane passed away that they completely forgot Janie Lane. They didn't even mention Janie. And those guys in Warrant had like 11 top singles, and they didn't even show a picture and mention his name, and they caught flack over it the next day. People were like, dude, you shut all these musicians and producers we've lost this past year. We lost Janie Lane, and you guys didn't even put that up there. You know, so it's the Academy, man. What do you expect? Those Grammy producers and all the people, they don't know shit. They don't know nothing about music.
No, that's why the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is not here.
Fuck Cleveland. Sorry. If you're from Cleveland.
You know, that's the second time that's been uttered on this podcast. Fuck Cleveland.
Exactly. Yeah. Just because Alan Freed said, you know, this is a rocking and rolling tune right here, and it was slang for black people banging, you know, knocking boots, you know, and that's why it's in Cleveland, Ohio. Well, once again, we'll make it a fifth time. Fuck Cleveland.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I blow a bubble. I let it go away. It should be in Memphis, or if you want to get, you know, particular about it, should be down in Mississippi, you know, is what I think.
Yeah, but nobody would go to it if it was down there.
I don't know, man. You get the Blues Highway down there and put it in Robinsonville or something.
And here's
maybe?
The thing, there is a Blues Hall of Fame being built in Memphis now.
Where?
Down on Main. They're repurposing an old building down there.
Huh. Well, that's gonna be pretty interesting. But when you're driving to Mississippi now, I'd like to note that instead of just saying, you know, welcome to Mississippi, feel yourself get dumber when you cross the border, it says welcome to the birthplace of America's music.
It should.
I mean, it says that on the big.
Oh, it does say.
Yes, it does say that on the big Mississippi signs now. Instead of just the Magnolia State or whatever, it says, welcome to Mississippi, home of America's music.
Well, somebody got smart finally.
Yep. Mississippi, man, you know.
Because there's always been a big fight down around Clarksdale and Robinsonville.
Right. About where the true crossroads is.
Right.
So, yeah.
It, you know, it crosses 61 at some point. But, you know, whatever. And see, that's a story that's never been done, is the Robert Johnson story.
Well, if you...
I mean, legitimate.
Okay. Because I think, say, Crossroads with Ralph Macchio.
Well, let's, come on, you know.
Hey, that's a great flick, man. It's a great flick.
It is a great movie, you know. And, you know, the little white guy.
I really am surprised that nobody has done that, though. Has done a true Robert Johnson, you know, document. Not a documentary,
you know,
but
like
real,
with a real black guy playing him.
Right. I'm really surprised. I mean, because he's... He's mentioned in a couple of different movies. There is also a, there's an episode of that TV show Supernatural that I watched that's about those guys where they deal with crossroads demons and the hellhounds on their trail and stuff and all that. And I knew instantly what it was going to be about when, as soon as the opening scene queued up, it's a black guy sitting in front of a microphone and it says, like, you know, Memphis, Tennessee or something on it, and it yeah. shows him playing the slide, and the name of the episode was Hellhounds on Your Trail. I'm like, pfft. Robert Johnson, this is going to be a good one. I'm going to like this. Crossroads demons, yes. And, you know, that's voodoo. That harkens back to, because, you know, it was a Legma, you know, and a Scratch, you know, guys' names. Like, it was all the devil thing. And that, dude, I love that mythology, man.
That's, oh, yeah. The whole badass. Thing about his death. And, oh, yeah. You know,
bringing him his guitar and let the devil tune his guitar and all that, and going and playing on top of, you know, graves and the cemetery and all that stuff. I mean, dude, that's myth. That's a mythology right there. And that's badass.
And that should be done. I mean, you could do it like, I guess it would be like Hollywoodland, which was the George Reeves story,
right, yeah.
where they had all the separate possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
You can do the same thing with that. You know, here's the myth of his death, and then here's the what really happened,
right?
Which were kind of closely aligned. I mean, aside from the fact that he was drinking poisonous whiskey, but
right.
getting caught cheating on, you know.
I like it in Crossroads. He says, you know, some books say Robert was stabbed. Some say he was shot, then stabbed. Some said he was poisoned. The guy that played, you know, Blind Dog Jefferson or whatever in the movie, Willie Brown,
yeah,
played his friend Willie Brown. He says, well, it all means one thing, dead.
Yeah.
You know, but
dead is dead.
Yeah, dead is dead. But I'm really surprised that a lot of people have not done, or somebody has done a movie about that yet. But then again, I mean, when you're talking about messing with Crossroads, man, I mean, you can't get any better than Steve Vai as the devil's guitar player.
Well, of course. Yeah.
That's so accurate right there. We got a white, big old white boy from Memphis. He go by the name of Jack Butler. Yeah, I mean, come on, man. Ralph Macchio, what more could you ask for? You know, I mean, seriously. You got the Karate Kid.
He took guitar lessons from B.B. King, I think. Was it BB? No, Eric Clapton, I think. Eric Clapton.
And then also Ty Cooter was part of the music and that stuff.
Ty Cooter.
He was part of that for it. But, you know, you talk about The Karate Kid. Did you know that the Karate Kid was actually an Oscar-nominated movie?
No.
Pat Morita was nominated for Best Supporting Actor the year that The Karate Kid came out.
Really?
Yeah, dude, I had no idea. I don't even remember why I was looking it up the other night. I was looking up something about The Karate Kid and Pat Morita, and I was looking at it, and it said... you know, awards and this and that.
He was on Happy Days, and for God's
yes,
sake.
Yes, he was on Happy. Al was the big...
He was the big dude in the early first two seasons, and then he left with his old lady.
And right.
then it This guy was the guy that bought it.
Yeah, and I can't remember what his name was in the show, but he was nominated for an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for The Karate Kid.
Wow.
Yep, I know, right? Useless 80s pop culture, dude, just stuck in my head. All the song lyrics, all the Kiss song lyrics, all the just everything else, and it's like, math? Who needs math? Fuck math. You know, I don't need that. So all that good schooling.
When Diana was sitting in here doing this podcast, mm-hmm. She's the reason why there's an explicit rating.
Oh, nice.
On the podcast.
Of course.
And she called me an asshole as a result of it.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
No, you're an asshole.
Yeah, no, because she goes, well, why was that? And I said, because I knew one day you'd be sitting here, and she starts laughing. She goes, oh, God, you're such an asshole.
Oh, nice, nice.
Well, you were doing pretty good up until we got to that point. She called me an asshole in that podcast probably about 3 or 4 times.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome. Well, that is Diana. I mean, her show has a, you know,
she blames the beast for all of that.
Right. Yeah, no. I talk to her on the phone all the time, and it's not the beast, man. It's not the beast. It's you could tell that's one girl who wasn't raised like we were. She never tasted lye soap a day in her life.
Uh-huh.
You know, or for me, it was Irish Spring, which, you know, tasted even worse.
Oh, that's nasty.
Oh, yeah, dude, shit like that. Now, that'd be considered child abuse, you know?
For me, it was Lifebuoy.
I don't know.
Soap.
Ugh.
Yeah, it was nasty.
No. Yeah, that and because I thought my mom was, you know, I'd call her bluff. You know, she's like, you going to put your mouth in the soap? And I'm like, whatever, woman, you ain't going to do that.
Yeah. I got the soap in the mouth because I think it was pretty conflicting for my father to actually do it at the time because there was this neighborhood kid who was trying to kick my ass. Mm. And I'm standing in the driveway bellowing to the entire neighborhood. So you ain't going to do shit because you're just a chicken shit. And so my dad's like, oh, God, I don't know. He stood up for himself, but he, you know.
Right,
you
know, yeah, how do I take it? Yeah. Yeah, I remember the first time I actually got in trouble for cursing in school. I was actually quoting a line from Smokey and the Bandit. I was in, like, second grade, and I was like, Bandit, where in the hell are you? And some little shit heard me say it and went and narked on me.
Oh, God.
You know, like second grade, man. I get narked on for saying hell. Dude, I have never been so scared in my life going home that day with a note from my mama saying that I used the word hell. No one had heard her say worse because she was married to a sailor.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
And she cursed worse than my father did. You know, so I was definitely scared about that. And she just looked at it and she was like, okay. She's like, you know, you're going to go stand in the corner for about, you know, 10 or 15 minutes and then you can come out. And I was like, whew, man, I got away with that fairly easy.
Well, hell's not such a filthy word.
Yeah, it wasn't like I came home and it was like I said, I was at school going fuck, fuck, fucking, fuck, fuck. You know? So,
you motherfucker.
Yeah, oh, dude, I heard my mother say that back in the day. And what kills me now is you can ask anybody, you can ask my wife, man. When I am at dinner out there at my mother's house, I'll be like, man, this motherfucker, or fuck this. And my mother's like, Michael, watch your mouth. My sister, who's 15 months younger than me, can sit across from me and go, yeah, if I don't lose my fucking job. My mom's like, uh-huh. Uh-huh. Just listen to her. But you let me go, man, those fucking people. Michael, what?
You're right.
You know, you better watch your mouth. And, of course, she has the selective memory where when I go, woman, what are you bitching about? The first time I heard the words son of a bitch, snake shit, motherfucker, they were all out of your mouth, and they were all referring to the man that is my father.
Michael, I never called your father a motherfucker. I'm like,
okay, Mom. If you say so. If you say so. And my dad will be over there going, just forget about it, Mom. Just let it go. Just let it go, son. Let it go. I'm like, whatever, Dad. I distinctly remember her calling you a cocksucker once, too. Yeah. And she used to make shit up when I was growing up, dude. She would make shit up. She would say, your asshole dips snuff and sucks buttermilk. Yeah, my mom would make shit up.
Well, that's creative.
Yeah, she'd be like, well, your asshole dips snuff and sucks buttermilk and shit. And I'd be like, I was like, what?
What
the hell did you just say to me, woman? You know, and it was those sayings when I grew up, she would get creative with. She'd be like, you know what, I'm gonna beat your ass so bad, you're gonna run like a damn striped-assed ape. And I'm like,
what
the fuck are you talking about, a striped-assed ape? Woman, I got no clue. You know, it's like, nah, congratulations, Mom, you've invented a whole new line of cursing.
She pissed her off that bad that,
oh,
you know.
Dude, my mother hit me with a frying pan. She hit me with a, you know, wooden spoon was one of her favorite weapons. And the sad part, too, was my father was in the Navy and he was in supply. He got everything that you needed. That paperclip you're playing with, that one, it came from my father in the Navy.
Right.
Well, he used to bring home these 24-inch wooden rulers that we would get our ass whooped with.
Uh-huh.
And they weren't those flimsy ones. It was good, solid wood.
They had the metal edge.
Yep, had the metal edge on it. And I would take them motherfuckers and burn them, break them, do whatever. And magically, the next day, another one would reappear. And not once did it go through my infantile mind at the time. You know, Dad's bringing these home. He's got a million of these sons of bitches up there. We got ready to move one year. My mom moved the couch, and there was like 20 of them stuck under the couch. And she's like, Mike, what? I didn't do it. I didn't do it. Yeah, she would whoop our ass with that, you know. And like I said, it never dawned on me that that's where they were coming from, was from my dad, you know, because he was not the disciplinary. My mother was the disciplinary, and she's 5 foot nothing,
right?
You know, my dad's the same size and build as me, and I was not scared of him at all. My mother scared shitless of her, so still am, because she's mean.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I was raised right. You know, mama tried, you know. At least I didn't turn 21 in prison doing life without parole. Yeah.
That's a good thing.
I know, right? It's like I still been there. I've been behind bars a couple of times, but, you know,
Save that for another show.
Yeah, I know, right? Part two. The 201 years.
Here's what's coming up on the next edition from Radioland. I'll paint this scenario for you, potential client. Airtime on Radio Memphis. If you'll allow me, Doc, Diana, Brother Doug, J.C. King, and a band, all of us, we have full run of the bar for however long we want. And the response would be, well, I would go broke. I wouldn't make any money. Now you get it. Whoever I did the work for has taken it with them to reuse it for something else. And not give me any consideration for it, and use it completely different than the spirit by which it was created. That's just being flat out fucking lazy.
Radio Memphis is an internet broadcasting service provided by PirateRadioStudios.com, Memphis, Tennessee, USA.
Well, on that then, that's that.
Sweet. Jeez, dude, that's easy. Just from sitting.
I find here
shit.
When I sit here and do these things, they're very cathartic. Mm-hmm. I feel better sometimes after doing them. Sometimes a little worse.
That's only if you're talking to Doug. You need a shower afterwards.
Oh, you know, I did the one with him, and I need to do another one with him at some point. But, you know, after listening to him after a while, and you have to get him just drunk enough. Because then all the real stuff comes
right,
out.
Right, right.
And then it's like if he drinks that much more, you're going to hear things that really shouldn't be known in public.
It's Doug, man. I mean, if you tune in and listen to him occasionally, it just the thing is, you never know what is going to come out of Doug's mouth.
No,
plain and simple. He's enjoyable. So, you know, yeah, listen to Radio Memphis and the Nighttime Groove with Brother Doug.
8 p.m. to whenever, Tuesday through Friday.
Till he runs out of beer or whiskey.
Right. You got my boy Doc here. You can find him weekday mornings, 9 a.m. to noon.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. And on the Around the World show, Memphis Radio Memphis Around the World.
With Dee when she shows up. Yeah, and of course, occasionally I come and sit in for the Beast when he's doing homework or something, you know, Memphis Metal Mondays.
He's got to make the diorama of Harvest Mill.
This is the universe. Here's Harvest Mill in the center. We rotate. Everything else goes around us. I couldn't resist.
That's right. He'll sit there. If he happens to figure out how a podcast works, he'll listen to it and go, yeah, he's right.
Oh God! Well, thank you for having me, sir. That's awesome.
Not a problem, and that's the way it goes. So, until next time, it's Rick Cheddar from Radioland.